Well, that's 2021. I thought this year in games was pretty great because I thought there was actually just a huge diversity of games out there. Now, you can say this every year, but what I'm trying to say is that there was no game that was like, you know, Last of Us Part 2, where you know that the games press would unite around it. And I feel like this year, many outlets that we've seen so far, and many hopefully to come, you know, there's just a real diversity of different games that different outlets are picking. And I love to see that. You know, I think that's much more healthy for the industry where everyone just has a different game of the year pick. I love that. I love that debate. I love that controversy, you might want to say. And it's also made it maybe the toughest list I've ever had to make because, you know, I actually think this year was an incredibly high quality of games. And I'm not maybe even talking about like the top few games. I mean, like, this was like the hardest time I've ever had picking, you know, 8, 9, 10, and then, you know, 11 and 12. I mean, you can see Chicory here, for example. That's like one of the games that will have featured in many people's top 10s. But for me, it's an 11 or 12. It just didn't quite make it. And that's not to say anything against Chicory. I love Chicory. And I don't normally talk about loving the number 11 and 12 games on my list. So, you know, I think that speaks to the quality of 2021. So, enough about Chicory. Enough about the hype. Let's get on and see my top 10 games of 2021. Number 10, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart. Rift Apart is an absolutely gorgeous Ratchet & Clank game. Those first 4 hours as you gradually gain more abilities, meet more characters, and come across larger and more exploration-based worlds seriously impressed me. After that, I felt the game flatlined at that same high level of quality, and there wasn't much mixing up of the formula after those first few hours. That doesn't hold this game back from being a must-play on PlayStation 5, especially as the system has few games that look and feel as incredible as Rift Apart. I also really enjoyed Rivet and Kit, and I look forward to where future games could take these characters or even do their own spin-off game. PlayStation 5 needed a high-quality, gorgeous Ratchet & Clank game that delivers on worlds, weapons, and bosses. And I think overall Rift Apart certainly does all that and more. Number 9, Halo Infinite. I've played all 7 Halo campaigns for the first time very recently, starting in March 2020. And I actually had an awesome time considering how few first-person shooters I've played. The game feel, the vehicles, and the lore of Halo all appealed to me, and I really loved the 7 campaigns, with Halo 3 being my absolute favourite. I'm a bit over halfway through Infinite's campaign at the time of writing, but so far it's evolving on the Halo formula in an incredible way. While many have compared the open world to Breath of the Wild, I think Infinite is similar to Breath of the Wild in a different way. And that's the sandbox nature of encounters. The grapple hook alone completely turns the Halo combat mechanics on their head in the best way possible. Grab weapons from the other side of the field, zip line up to snipers, or even hijack a Banshee out of the sky. This makes things that you could do in previous Halo games much more fun and fast paced to do in Infinite. The open world, complete with mongooses and warthogs to traverse the space and collect upgrades and move the plot along, it all feels like a very natural way for the Halo game loop to work in 2021. I've also had a ton of fun with Infinite's multiplayer. Sure, I'm pretty bad, and I think it's a testament to the game's quality that someone as bad as me can still have a great time. Often in a game like Apex Legends, sessions become pretty miserable very quickly when I get sniped dead after stealthing around the map for 20 minutes. Halo's arena-style modes are way more my jam. I couldn't really be happier with what I've seen from Infinite, and I can't wait to see the rest of the campaign. 343 have done that task which is so hard to do in media of recreating nostalgia with a heavy dose of modern polish, while at the same time adding a ton of new stuff in there as well. As a very new Halo fan, I really don't think I could be much happier, and if I'd beaten the whole game before making this video, then perhaps this game could have featured even higher up on this list. Number 8, Forza Horizon 5. I was a little bummed when the rumours for the next Forza Horizon taking place in Japan turned out to be false. With very little personal reference to Mexico, I was a bit skeptical how invested I could get into this world, especially considering Forza Horizon 4 included my home city of Edinburgh in Scotland. But I actually really enjoyed Mexico in the end. Sure, Scotland and the UK will always be my home, and that's pretty hard to beat, but Horizon 5 delivered in so many other ways that made me keep coming back and wanting more. Shorter loading times, 4K visuals, 60 frames per second, and a quick resume on my Xbox Series X. All these features made for an incredibly smooth experience and perhaps felt like the biggest change from Horizon 4. The diversity of biomes in Mexico I also felt worked really well going between cross-country rally races and road races. British fields are nice for cross-country, but herring down a volcano at 200 miles per hour is just not an experience that you'll find much of in the UK. The overall experience just feels smoother with Horizon 5 and reminded me why Forza really are the best in the business when it comes to driving games. I could play a Forza game once a year until the day I die and have a great time doing it. Sure, it's a series that iterates incredibly gradually, but hey, when you're the industry leader, why would you want to change? Here's hoping Forza Horizon 6 can take place in the land of the rising sun, but until then, let's bomb down some volcanoes and through some rainforests. Number 7, Kena Bridge of Spirits. Sometimes putting together some of the simpler things in games in a really solid package can work incredibly well. For me, Kena perfectly blended the light-hearted platforming and collecting of a game like Spyro and combined it with an incredibly tough and rigorous combat system like God of War 2018. I had an absolute blast with Kena, and the combat combined with the design of the world was the best bit. Some of the bosses are so much more brutal than the art style of the game would suggest. I honestly do fear that the marketing for a more family-orientated experience will shock a few gamers out there. And speaking of bosses, they really get stronger and more engaging to fight as you accumulate abilities throughout the game. I was particularly impressed by a trilogy of bosses you fight near the end of the game that really mixed up the combat and made you fight each one in a specific and unique way. Oh, and putting hats on cute little rots is just the best! The way that the rot are utilized as a chargeable meter in combat really increased the variety and scope of things that you can do. Kena's not perfect, but my god is it a stellar first outing for Ember Lab, and I cannot wait for an inevitable sequel. Number 6, Death's Door. You know, there's just not enough high quality 2D Zelda likes these days. Indie devs love making Metroidvanias out the wazoo, but when it comes to some good old fashioned dungeons and bosses, I find that indie Metroid games steal all the limelight. Sure, MBZ will be screaming at this video just now saying that Death's Door isn't a Zelda-like, even though remember, MBZ doesn't really believe in video game genres, but hey, I actually think this game broadly is one. Death's Door does a great job at staying lean to the bone in its design. There are only three main areas as part of a short 5-6 hour campaign, and with only a limited number of collectibles, I actually found I was more keen than normal to go out and seek them to boost my magic and health. Throw in an incredible musical score, an intriguing world, where warping between worlds actually makes some sense unlike many other video game worlds, and overall you have a very impressive package. Combat can be brutal and is a huge focus above puzzles in this game. I actually found the combat very satisfying. Combining dodge rolls with melee attacks, which then boost your ammo for ranged attacks, just felt great. It has a real synergy that feels fantastic, especially when fighting large groups of enemies or some well-designed bosses. Death's Door blends a tough combat system with some very simple but elegant dungeon design, and tells a curious, unusual story in a short but excellent way. Go get that 2D Zelda itch scratched right now. Number 5, Unsighted. Talking of me moaning about not enough 2D Zelda likes, here's another one, and in fact, this one is even better. Unlike Death's Door, Unsighted feels like the sort of game that if I was a video game developer and I had the resources, I would actually want to try and make it myself. Unsighted has layers upon layers of systems that all synergize and make the exploration reinforce the other mechanics in the game. And boy, are there a lot of mechanics. We're talking syringes to refill health, cogs to power up Alma, chip slots where you can equip chips to help boost your health, your stamina and defense, as well as money which can be invested in these upgrades and more. There's a fantastic world with dungeons that seamlessly link to the overworld, which works perfectly for shortcuts, and it makes returning to areas later in the game a much breezier experience than your average Zelda game. Unsighted's dungeons are some of the best 2D styled dungeons I've played. The puzzles and the layout of the dungeons made me stop and think just the right amount, where I was able to beat them all without a guide. And this for me is the perfect balance of when I find a game is just that bit too challenging. There's also some really tough boss fights that are incredibly brutal but still very fair, all with their own unique counter timings, weak spots and phases. Again, having a grasp of how all the systems work plays a huge role in deciding how to equip yourself before each fight, while still the game requires you to execute your action skills to actually take the boss down. It's a very satisfying combination. Unsighted bites off so many things, but ultimately successfully chews through all of them. I've not even been able to go through all the things this game has to offer, but I promise, if you like 2D Zelda and some challenging dungeons, Unsighted should definitely not go off your radar. Number 4, Moonglow Bay. There's something about fishing. I've never tried fishing, and I'll be honest, I really don't want to try fishing. But fishing in video games is far, far more interesting to me. Bit like farming, I guess, with Stardew Valley. Moonglow Bay takes the fishing mechanic and makes it way more involved in a game like Stardew, with different rods, lures, a net you can throw, upgrades to your boat, and other forms of fishing. Then throw in the other core mechanic of the game, cooking. Completing cute minigames to cook some delectable looking meals that you can then sell to the population of Moonglow Bay is done in such a charming and relaxing way with simple button prompts and timings. Fishing, making meals, and selling fish is kind of a simple gaming loop, but it completely got me. It was so satisfying to stay out on the water, often days at a time, sleeping on your boat and discovering new areas, to come back to the bay and then give the town a big cash injection. Because while that loop is my favourite part of the game, the townsfolk and the charm of the bay mean the game has a lot more to offer than purely fishing. Going down the local tavern and hearing tales of this fish or that, only to go out on your boat and explore the seas searching for the rumoured fish, never got old for me. The game does a great job in its storytelling of making you feel invested in the town, its people, and helping the town get back on its feet again. The ending to Moonglow Bay was the emotional peak in video games for me in 2021, and that is due in part to an incredible soundtrack by Lena Raine of Celeste and Chicory fame. Sure, Moonglow Bay had a bunch of bugs when I played it, and it sounds like those are gradually being ironed out, but honestly, once I got past a couple of the more irritating bugs very early game, it didn't bother me in the slightest, because the rest of the game just kept on delivering. If there was an award for warm, snuggly blanket game of the year, it would hands down go to Moonglow Bay. At the moment though, it will have to settle for number 4 on this list. Number 3, Metroid Dread. Well, this was certainly a shocking game to come out in 2021. We may never know what Nintendo's take on an original Metroidvania game would have been from 2002 until 2020, but hey, at least we get to know what one looks like in 2021, and that's all with the help of Mercury Steam. Metroid Dread is an incredibly linear Metroid game with just enough non-linearity to make you feel a bit clever. I don't have a strong preference for linear versus non-linear in these types of games, so I was happy to see Dread's unusual take. Getting to an area and the door closing behind you may be frustrating to some, but on the bright side, I enjoyed the clarity of knowing where to go next. It felt kind of nice never having to reach for a guide. To be honest, the only places I needed a guide was in helping me beat some of the bosses, because boy are they tough in this game. Now, I don't want to overhype it because I actually think they're more straightforward than the bosses in Samus Returns from 2017, and clearly many people out there missed that game. But while these bosses are tough, they felt super smooth to take on and satisfying to beat thanks to the impeccable feeling controls. Samus really does just handle seamlessly in Dread, and you're going to want to be as smooth as possible for the Emmy sections of the game. I really enjoyed these sections and thought the checkpointing was generous enough where while they were tough, they never felt overly annoying or like a slog. Throw in a couple of chances to escape an enemy's grip, and it was actually a really nice hook to the game that makes Dread unique. Metroid Dread is how I wanted 2D Metroid to evolve in 2021. Its focus on feel and tense boss fights is where I feel 2D Metroid is at its best. Sure, the atmospheric nature of Super Metroid feels closer to the 3D Prime games at this point in time, and honestly, that's okay. Games like Ori and Will of the Wisps have taken over the environmental side of Metroidvanias. Dread sticks to blasting aliens and getting through puzzle-like corridors while looking cool doing it. Let's have more of that, please, Nintendo. Number 2, Eastward. For an industry that treats Earthbound like it's the genesis of everything weird and charming in all video games, one of my biggest disappointments of the year was that more people weren't talking about Eastward. In my opinion, the bizarre and characterful adventure is the closest thing we have ever had to Earthbound since Earthbound, I guess. Sam and John's quest across this genuinely strange world introduces you to some excellently written relationships. Not just between John and Sam, but the large cast of characters that you meet along the way. The source of the dark, terrifying matter, the miasma, may be the through line for the main plot, but it's the character arcs along the way where the game really shines. Sure, the fighting mechanics could be a little smoother, but the game still offers some pretty strong Zelda-style dungeons and level design that actually feels right at home. Eastward is a very long game that treats each new location you visit with utmost care. While there are a limited number of locations in the 25-hour experience, the game does an excellent job of making sure that each location almost feels like a new home before the plot moves you on. In an industry where games are constantly asking us to move on to the next thing, I actually found it refreshing how long you spend in most of these locations, especially New Dam City. Eastward has such a laser focus on its characters and their writing that builds the weirder, wider world, and deserves so much respect for that. Eastward is a truly special experience that must not be missed, and I cannot wait to see where Pixpill go next on their developer journey. Number 1, It Takes Two. When I first saw gameplay for It Takes Two, I thought it looked like it would be a lot of fun. I massively enjoyed A Way Out and Brothers and felt like they were both doing cool, unique things in the narrative space for video games. My expectation was that It Takes Two would follow down this narrative-focused route. And sure enough, It Takes Two is fairly narrative-heavy, and honestly, it's one of the weakest aspects of the game. Now you may wonder, why on earth is it your game of the year then, Pally? Variety. Variety in mechanics is something I've always loved in games, and when done well in games such as Mario Odyssey, it can really make a game sing. Throw in the fact that It Takes Two is an entirely cooperative experience, and it had to take the top spot. The sheer variety of mechanics that each level throws at you throughout its roughly 12-hour story genuinely feels only comparable to games like Mario Odyssey. Many of the abilities reminded me a lot of the captures from Odyssey, but then throw in the co-op element and the way abilities synergize with your partner's abilities, and you've got yourself a truly unique and incredible experience. While the story is pretty flat, Cody and May, and perhaps less so Dr. Hakim, are actually fun to follow along with, and they are voice acted really well. You visit some truly strange and bizarre worlds in It Takes Two that go far beyond the initial Toy Story where small people in a toy room aesthetic. The second level, The Tree, is easily one of my favourite levels I've ever seen in a video game, and involves perfect synergy between the abilities Cody and May have for the level, combined with a truly edge-of-the-seat finale, as new game modes are spat at you every few minutes. It was truly wild. Oh, and did I mention there are a ton of mini-games you can play against your co-op partner that randomly pop up across the whole game. There are some incredibly strong ones in there, with ice skating perhaps being the best, and chess is probably one of the weakest. It's not easy getting a pal to sit down for 12 hours to play a game with you, and I'm very lucky to have a co-host like MBZ who is more than willing to consume this incredible game in a weekend with me. But if you can find the time and a friend willing to join you on this journey, you will not be disappointed with It Takes Two. It's an unbelievably unique experience, and it's the best co-op experience I've ever had playing a game. And there you go, that's Bally's top 10 games of 2021. Another game that didn't quite make the list is Unpacking, which you can see here. And I think Unpacking deserves its own personal award. And that award is for new method of storytelling unique to video games. Sorry for the lengthy name, but like, I love it when games can convey a narrative in a unique way that is unique to video games and unique to the medium. And I think that really drives the industry forward when we can see these games, often indie games, not always, just showing us new ways that the medium can evolve and change, because I just think that's so exciting. But yeah, that's the end of 2021, I guess. Thank you to everyone who has supported me, supported MBZ, supported our show, our podcast. You know, we've been going for 8 years now with this Nintendo Life, and we intend to keep on going because honestly, we have such a great time doing it. We really do love the show, and we love putting our energy into the show, playing the games, talking about them, and it's made all the more fun when we interact with listeners through our Discord community and emails. So I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone for that, for 2021. And yeah, to everyone, stay safe out there. I hope you and your loved ones are having a great holiday season, and I want to wish you all a happy new year.